Do you have an idea for a podcast, but you don't know where to start? Maybe you're overwhelmed by all the tech or you're convinced nobody will actually listen to you. Well, I'm Shauna Game. After 9.5 years as a professional podcaster, at this show, Everyone's Talking Money, and 25 million downloads later, let me tell you the secret to a profitable podcast. It is building a solid foundation, your podcast roadmap before you launch. That's why I created the Podcaster Class, a fast-paced group cohort podcasting for profit 8-week style MBA program. The Podcaster Class is immersive, comprehensive, and insanely motivational. If you want to create a podcast, DIYing a launch is just not the way to go. In the Podcaster Class, you'll get the tools, tips, and strategies to create a podcast that resonates with listeners and one you can be proud of. Get this, 90% of podcasters never make it to episode 3. That's 2.8 million podcasters who just quit. So to be a top podcaster, you only need to publish 21 episodes, but you got to make them good. So in the Podcaster Class, I'm taking the mystery out of how to create, launch, and profit from your podcast so you can create a top 1% podcast just like this one. The May cohort is now open for enrollment. Classes start May 22nd. There are only 15 spots open. You are going to learn podcasting with me and 14 other amazing people. You can learn all the details at thepodcasterclass.com. Use code podcast when you sign up for $100 off. That's thepodcasterclass.com. You know I'm a big fan of enjoying life while still being smart financially. That's why I love ButcherBox. I can get a variety of high-quality meat, seafood, chicken, and pork at an amazing value, all with exclusive member deals delivered to my door with free shipping always. One thing I just never wanted to cut out of my spending plan is eating good food. And with ButcherBox, I don't have to, and neither do you. Where else can you get free protein for a whole year? Yes, you heard that right. One of my favorite go-to dinners is a salmon bowl. I'm not even a huge salmon lover, but ButcherBox's wild-caught salmon is oh so good. I make a nice little marinade, saute some veggies, cook the salmon, and throw in some Weiss. And it is an amazing dinner. If you want to take less trips to the grocery store and always have prepared meat in the freezer for a lot less money, you need ButcherBox in your life. Sign up at butcherbox.com/ETM and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/ETM.
So the biggest breakthrough to make the transition from a six-figure entrepreneur to a seven-figure entrepreneur, a six-figure entrepreneur is all about chasing sales and landing contracts. A seven-figure entrepreneur understands that that level of growth and sustaining that level of growth isn't about chasing contracts or hunting down sales. It's about building an ecosystem where that level of revenue is a natural production of the ecosystem that you've built. It's a totally different way of thinking about business growth.
You're listening to Millennial Money with award-winning money expert and serial entrepreneur, Shauna Come to Game, where we flip the script on the old school approach to everything your parents never taught you about money. Each week, Shauna creates a safe space by talking with special guests from around the world about money wellness, entrepreneurship, traveling like a boss, and what makes millennials tick. Unique stories, trailblazing perspectives, tips, tricks, and everything there is to know about money. Find it all here as you uncover your money story and unlock the life you want to live. Pretty cool, right? Here's Shauna, money expert, Indiana Hoosier, and burger aficionado.
We've all spent more time with family lately. It can feel like old times, but your mind is on the future too, and what you can do to shape it. At Sandy Spring Bank, we work with clients to help them grow and protect their money with wealth management, trust services, and insurance so they can enjoy today and ultimately pass along their wealth. We believe real banking is a conversation. Let's talk about your dreams. Visit sandyspringbank.com/wealth. Wealth and insurance products are not FDIC insured, not guaranteed, and may lose value.
Only 2% of female entrepreneurs make more than $1 million. That is a staggering statistic that has to change. My guess is if you're listening to this episode, you are intrigued by the idea of looking at your bank account and seeing those seven fingers hanging out. I am right there with you. That sounds like one happy day to me. Our guest, Eleanor Beaton, is the founder of a company called Sapphi Media, an education and coaching company for women entrepreneurs, and host of the Power Plus Presence Plus Position podcast. And Eleanor, she is on this mission, I love this, to double the number of women entrepreneurs who scale past $1 million in revenue by 2030. I really like the sounds of that. So how do you get there? Well, in this episode, Eleanor shares how to make the leap from six figures to the illustrious seven figures, how to reframe your idea of wealth, and why as women, making money truly is power. The hairs on my arms are still standing up from this conversation. No matter which gender you may identify with, you're going to learn a lot from our brilliant guest, Eleanor Beaton, on this powerful episode. I'm Shauna Compton-Game. This is Millennial Money. So thrilled to bring you this episode. Here we go. Eleanor, I am so thrilled to have you on the podcast today. Thank you so much for joining us.
It is such a pleasure to be here to talk about money, one of my favorite topics.
It's everyone has that love-hate relationship with money, right? Some people love it, some people hate it. There's a polarity with it.
Totally.
Well, I was reading your bio, kind of prepping for our conversation, and I just have to ask, so, okay, you descended from the eldest brother of the last king of Fiji.
Yes, very interesting. Ma'am.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about this and like, how did this all play into like your role in life?
Yeah. Well, so the last king of Fiji was this guy named Thakombau. And in the Fiji Islands, the way that it works is that you would have these sort of chiefly families, and yes, very patriarchal, as it was back in the day, but you'd have these chiefly families. And from that chiefly family, the second oldest brother was the king, and the oldest brother, that guy's role was to be the advisor to the king. And I always thought this was so brilliant, right? Because the big thing with being a leader is that it's lonely.
For sure.
Sometimes. And so they kind of had that built into the fabric. Yeah. So my family comes from that oldest brother. And it's so interesting because when I look back over my career, my life, I feel like I've always been in this sort of advisor role to other leaders.
Interesting. So are there any interesting, like, is the right word Fijian?
Fijian cultures? Fijian. Yes. Yeah. Fijian. Yeah.
Are there any interesting, like, Fijian cultures around money?
Ooh, yes. So in fact, well, this is kind of interesting. So on my dad's side, my paternal grandfather, he was a monetary economist and professor, and he wrote a book called The History of Money. This was published in like 1995 at the time when it was published among kind of the sort of nerdy, you know, fiscal economists and that kind of thing who were in the know. They called it one of the best books that was published that year. And it was so neat because on it, in honor of my mom, who was Fijian, he put a whale's tooth. And so in Fiji, whale's teeth were considered currency. And so, you know, the number of whale's teeth that you had sort of dictated wealth. But interestingly, in that culture, there's this big culture of something called kara kara, which is that, you know, like if I came over to your house, Shanna, and I said, "Oh, Shanna, that's a beautiful bracelet," you'd probably feel obligated to give it to me. So sharing material possessions is huge. And growing up, when we would go, you know, my mom was constantly giving my things to my cousins and stuff. I just didn't, and they were giving me things. I just didn't understand it. So there's this sense, I guess, of the fluidity, the temporal nature of possessions, that nothing that we own is actually ours.
Wow. We should have that custom, I think, in the US.
Right?
Yeah. It's all like, no, I'm not sharing. This is mine.
Exactly. I worked for this. I earned this. It's mine. Yeah. It's just a totally different way of looking at things, for sure.
And then you also shared that your mom, she gave up this teaching career to stay at home, raise a family. And of course, that made her then financially dependent upon your dad. My mom had sort of the same sort of story where she was the stay-at-home mom and it was the dad, you know, went out when he was the breadwinner. And it's the same sort of, I don't want to say it's like a, I don't know, the patriarchal system, but it was just like kind of what they knew to do at that time. But, you know, your mom told you that money is power and that you always need to make your own money. So I'm wondering how that that sort of money story has shaped where you are now and what you do.
You know, it's been both incredibly helpful and also has been somewhat limiting. So here's what I mean by that. It was seeing my mom, this incredible, you know, sort of capable, smart woman, and see how in some ways her power, her practical power was diminished because she wasn't making her own money, even inside a marriage that was by all, you know, by many standards, very healthy. My parents, you know, had a good, healthy relationship until my father passed away. But there was this undercurrent of power dynamics because she didn't make her own. And so I was just so incredibly determined. Like, I did not want anybody to have power over me. And I never wanted to be in the situation in which I saw her. So, you know, saw that she could, you know, would be like having to have a budget and not really being able to make decisions that she wanted to make. So, for instance, she wanted to invest. She wanted to take money and invest, you know, at, you know, through the course of her life. And my dad was much, you know, was less into investing. And so she just didn't have that opportunity. So for me, it looked like I never allowed any guys to pay for dates. Like, I was always like, no, I'll pay for me. I paid for all of my dates. I was, you know, really, it was always really important to me to work and make my own money. That stuff was always really important. As I have continued, though, I found that that sort of fierce independence, sometimes it makes me a little too hands-on with things. And that, you know, as I've grown, I've started to see, no, other people can be a part of it. I don't have to always be working for the money. I can allow money to work for me.
Yeah. And kind of thinking about that, I'm curious your thoughts on how do we embrace the power of money, the power of making money? And speaking specifically for our female listeners, without being total controlled by money, is there a way to find that balance in there?
Yeah, this is so fascinating to me. So part of the work that I do too, you know, so I do a lot of work with female founders, but I also sit on, you know, boards of venture capital organizations. I do a lot of work, you know, and consulting work through my business with, you know, nonprofits and government agencies that are really looking to figure out how do we get more female founders, you know, into the business ecosystem. Right. And what's so interesting is that what we're finding is that, yeah, women have less access to capital. We're not asking, when we do ask for investors to come into our business, we're asking later. So there is this sense of, I don't want to say we're risk averse, but there's this sense of carefulness with money that we have as women that I think, you know, that is this sense of control, and that it could be very beneficial for us as women to look at more, less just the cash and more the flow, and that money is actually a tool to empower ends. It's not just something we hoard. It's a tool that can, that flows and that can empower greater impact.
I mean, this is sort of, I don't know, a head scratcher question that we could probably spend a lot of time on, but what do you think, or how do you think the world in general would look if there was a more kind of equitable balance between female and male leaders?
Oh my gosh. So this is huge. And I'll tell you a story. So before I did the work that I do today, I had this communications consultancy. And what I did was I would, you know, I basically was a communications advisor and consultant to leaders. So politicians, you know, men and women who are leading like billion-dollar companies. So when you're at that level, you're often fielding questions like, do you want to write a book? You know, can you come and do this speech? And so what they want is that ability to just create some cohesive messaging and kind of support to help them get their story out. So I did a lot of this type of work. And I can remember I was And because of that, I would learn a lot about how these leaders were using money. And I can remember, you know, one of the most successful, accomplished women business leaders I ever worked with. And we were touring around her hometown and we're going from one place to the other. And I realize that she, over years, has been quietly giving, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to organizations, to museums, to nonprofit organizations, just really, really using her money to advance the people around her. And because I had this view and these sort of personal connections to the leaders, what I saw anecdotally is that the women were disproportionately giving, right? They were giving sooner and they were disproportionately giving. And that was my experience. I don't have other data to back that up, but it's so funny because on the venture capital side, we take later. So it looks like we give earlier and take later. And so I think that if you look at it, I think that is, you know, is that potentially something that we could see, potentially a more equitable distribution. And it's not like, you know, giving to any old charity, but it's really giving to organizations that could, that were going to use that money in a smart way. So to me, what inspired me so much about that, I was like, that's wealth. Like, yeah. I would love to generate wealth to be able to do what I see her doing. That's a big reason for me.
And also not to have to like splash it all over the place, to just be doing it behind the scenes and in her own way of kind of changing society, I think is really cool.
It's so cool. And, you know, at the time I was earlier in my career and so didn't have the means that I, you know, you just, as if things go well every year, you have more means, you know, so this is earlier in my, earlier in my career. And I remember thinking, oh man, if I had her amount, if I had the money that she had, I would be dressed head to toe in Armani. I would have this. I would have that. Like, this is kind of what I thought. And so I had these goals, these like financial goals set for myself. And they were at the time distant. And so I had to work really hard to get there. And it was so interesting because I found when I reached those initial level financial goals that I had for myself, I really saw how I wasn't necessarily happier. I had pretty much everything that I wanted. And so for me, my relationship with like material things, it shifted and it really wasn't as important. I started to understand why she was using her money the way that she was. I started to get some insight. Now, look, I still don't have as much as she has, but, or she had, but, you know, I started to get a small taste of what it's like, you know, when your desire to make an impact is greater than your desire for possession.
So talking about impact, I know you're on this mission to double the number of women entrepreneurs in particular who can scale a business past $1 million in revenue. And you want to do this by 2030, which
very good. We've got about 200,000 female founders. We need to get over that point. So yeah, I've got my work cut out for me.
So I think we've already kind of talked about a few of the parameters, but why are women entrepreneurs hitting the wall and not being able to get past this $1 million mark?
So in some ways, it's because of the types of businesses that we're starting. A lot of us will start service-based businesses, which are notoriously harder to scale. If you look at where the big wealth is being generated on the entrepreneurial side, it is being generated by technology companies. So these are companies where the founders are starting proprietary technology that is developed in-house that can be scaled internationally, you know? And so that's a very different type of business. And, you know, because of the consulting work that I do, I would be in these rooms where I'd be talking to these founders and these venture capital people, and I would tell them about my business, which was a very typical business started by women, a service-based business, and they would kind of write me off as what they called a lifestyle business. And I would get so furious. You know, I was like, this is not a lifestyle business. Like, I have employees. We're not, you know, we're stable, we're growing, we pay our taxes, all of this kind of thing. But that's where I think it's one of the reasons it's like, number one, we're starting businesses that are seen as unscalable. And so in a service type of business, you know, it, what really traps the founder is that we're typically trading dollars for hours, and we're typically doing a lot of contract-based work that's super complex and therefore very difficult to scale. And so what has to happen is that you have to stop looking at contracts and start looking at scalable offers, you know, and how you scale the delivery of a service-based business while maintaining quality and not doing the work yourself. So this is not easy to do. And I would say it's every bit as difficult as developing a piece of technology or developing a piece of software. Like, we don't look at it in the same way, but it is every bit as tricky. So I think that's one way, you know, the types of businesses that we start and really understanding and valuing how challenging it is, how much attention it takes, you know, and the investment that the founder has to make the business strong enough to grow and scale. So that's part of it, you know, a big part.
So what would be some examples then of like creating a scalable business?
Yeah. So I can remember, and I'll give you, so the ones that some, that, you know, I think people who are listening would be very familiar with would be things like, okay, can you take your knowledge and turn it into a course, you know, or a program or something like that. And so that's one thing that, as the online education industry has grown, that becomes something that, you know, I think more and more people are familiar with. But, you know, a couple years ago, I was growing my company and we took a big leap and realized, okay, we need a different level of accounting help. Like, I had kind of had bookkeepers and stuff and people to help ensure I was compliant with taxes and all of that. But I didn't really have somebody who could help me think strategically about getting the business set up properly from an accounting perspective. So I go in, we book a meeting, we go in to see the guy. He's great. And so his name was Jim. And so in the meeting, I'm like, Jim, you know, because I'm kind of falling asleep thinking about, as he's kind of talking about tax structure. So basically, I did this to keep myself entertained, but it was super valuable. I'm like, Jim, tell me, what is the difference between when you think about all of your entrepreneur clients, especially the service-based ones, what is the difference between the richest and the poorest? This is how I put it. It was, you know, what's the difference between the ones who really have money and the ones who don't? And so, of course, the ones who really had money were the ones who were able to sell their businesses. And he said, here's the difference. Those people, they saw themselves, the core business was professional development internally. Like, they saw themselves primarily not as the doers, but as creating this company that was really good at teaching its employees to do, to deliver the service it, you know, it offered. And that really stuck with me. It was such an astute answer. And I think it really showed me how business owners, like how entrepreneurs, whether you're a consultant, you know, an HR consultant or whatever you're doing, or a hairdresser, or you have a salon or brick and mortar, it's not just the thing you sell and deliver, but it's how good are you at training other people to do that? And so it was really, really powerful, you know, so that, you know, what that means as far as an example goes, when you get really good at training, now you're able to have other people do what you do to the same standard of quality, you know, so that's basically you become, well, I don't know if this is the best example, but you kind of become the McDonald's of your industry.
The weather is getting warmer. I'm so excited, and it is time to say goodbye to all those jackets and sweaters and hello to the shorts and t-shirts. I wanted to update my summer workout wardrobe for the long haul without, you know, spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince, and I am in love. Quince is your go-to place from everything from premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part of all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes those savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. Okay, I bought the dreamiest pair of workout leggings and a bright pink workout top to match. Honestly, ladies, I gotta tell you, these leggings you need. The price cannot be beat, and I feel like a million bucks wearing this cozy workout-friendly outfit. I've worn it for like 5 days straight. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/etm for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/etm to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/etm. In those moments when money is just not moving as fast as your dreams, Earnin provides the financial momentum you need to keep moving forward. Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. You just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then you access up to $100 a day as you work, and you can leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. I honestly would use Earnin in lots of different ways, but what's on my mind recently is I need a night out. I need some good tacos to sip on a few virgin margaritas and celebrate you all helping this podcast earn 26 million downloads. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, "When I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. Gives me a lot of peace of mind." Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in "Talkin' Money" under podcast when you sign up. It will really help the show. "Talkin' Money" under podcast. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank, subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank & Trust, member FDIC. I'm going to be real with you. Identity theft is on the rise, and you do not want to wake up one morning and discover that your bank account has been emptied, or you're overdue on credit cards you never even applied for. We talk about this often on the podcast, but you don't realize how much of your information is available to scammers on the internet and how susceptible you and your family are to identity theft and fraud. I know it's scary, but now you can get your data removed with Delete Me. That's why I personally choose Delete Me. Delete Me is a subscription service that removes your personal information from the largest people search databases on the web, and in the process helps prevent potential ID theft, doxing, and phishing scams. I just started using Delete Me and I got my regular personalized privacy report. And I was shocked what they found and removed. It was pages of information about me that I did not want online. Here's how it works. You sign up and provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there. I cannot tell you how relieved I felt to have Delete Me. And you know, it's also a great service for your parents or grandparents to help protect them from identity theft. Delete Me is not just a one-time service. Delete Me is always working for you, constantly monitoring and removing the personal information you do not want on the internet. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me, now at a special price for my listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use promo code ETM at checkout. The only way you get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and enter code ETM at checkout. joindeleteme.com/ETM. Go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use code ETM for 20% off.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I mean, that's certainly been one of my weak points is being able to train people to think the way I think. But I know that that is the breakthrough point because then you're able to step into a different role, step into more of a visionary role and let other people play to their strengths, I think.
Totally. And you know, because it's so interesting, like, so you and I, we do our thing. And a lot of times we start these businesses based on this incredible skill set that we have. And so we're unconscious competence, you know, like we're just so good at something we don't even realize. And so teaching requires us to take a step backwards to conscious competence. You know, like when you first learn to drive and you're still like, now I can drive somewhere and I'll totally forget the whole experience of driving. Like I just know my body knows exactly what to do, unconscious competence. But when I was 16 years old, driving on my own for the first time, it was like, first, put the key in the ignition, turn to the left. Then, you know, like it was conscious competence. So this teaching requires that we take the step back, which means that we need to, you know, exert more patience, which I don't know about you, but I mean, I got into business because I was impatient.
100%.
So, yeah.
So thinking about this idea of becoming a seven-figure entrepreneur, are there, you know, this is obviously a big question that's kind of looming out there, especially for women. Do we have to give up something to get to this place? Like, is there exchange that happens, or is there a way to become this seven-figure entrepreneur and still have life balance, whatever word we want to plug in there?
Yeah, we do. There are things that we need to give up, but they're different than what we thought. You know, in the first iteration of my business, I thought that I needed to grind. I thought that I needed to give up my weekends. I thought I really equated my ability to create value with time spent at my desk. You know, so I worked really, really hard. My whole business was set up that way. I didn't have boundaries with clients. I was constantly saying yes to whatever it was that they wanted, not charging effectively. So what I realized, the things that I needed to give up were sort of three core things. So the first thing that I needed to give up was everything but my most lucrative clients, right? And so for any business, you know, that whole sort of 80-20 rule, but you know, inside every business, there is a category of clients who are easy to work with. They pay your company really well. What they pay you for is actually easy and a joy to deliver. And, you know, when I looked at my client base, about 35% of my clients were them, and 65% were others who were not as valuable. As humans, they were fantastic, but to the business, they weren't as valuable. So I realized I did this big ballsy move where I basically eliminated 65% of my clientele overnight. Like I'd had it.
Wow.
Yeah. And that was the year actually that, basically was a year where I saw a huge leap in growth, and that just sort of really preceded my leap to seven figures. So the number one thing to let go of is your least valuable clients. Everybody, I would say, but those top value clients. So that's the first thing to let go of. The second thing I think to let go of is, it's related to that, and it's the need to be all things to all people. So, yeah. You know, just that ability to be like, here's what we do in this business. Here's our specialty. And to allow that to be enough. That was difficult for me because I really had trained myself that my value was really about being whatever the client needed me to be, to pull out the stops, you know? And so I was doing a lot of different things under the umbrella of my service. And, you know, I had to allow myself to get really focused and to allow that to be enough and to allow them to go to others for these other things, you know? So that again, yeah, brought a huge focus, but it was very scary, really scary. Yeah,
that is really scary to say, this is what I do and this is what I do well. This is my zone, and yes, everything else is somebody else.
Right? It's huge. And then I guess the final thing is to allow, I had to allow myself, and you know, listeners will probably find this, you have to allow yourself to let go of the need to do everything, and that some of the most important investments, like to really be able to grow, you actually need more than enough support. Because to be able to be creative and actually drive growth and create the ecosystem that can produce the kind of revenue that you want, you really need to have help. Because if you don't have the right level of help, what happens is that growth becomes painful. So if you find yourself not responding to sales quickly, You know, getting very stressed out about the volume of customers or that kind of thing. All of that is a sign. You know, what happens is you'll start to avoid growing because growing creates more headaches. And the solution to that isn't to stop growing unnecessarily. I think the solution to that is to make sure that you have the help that you need to manage the growth that you have. And so that's the third category of thing I think you need to let go of. It's a different type of sacrifice. It's a different type of discernment, you know?
Yeah, I like it. I like it. And it breaks sort of the old school, what you have to let go of, kind of model, right?
Yeah.
So you're stepping into this new way of thinking about it. And kind of along those lines, I would imagine that as someone gets close to that scaling beyond $1 million mark, or even gets close to that mark, maybe some old money stories or blockages kind of come up. Is there anything common that you see people kind of get stuck in the muck in when they're reaching that point?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's so many, you know what I mean? And I think that a lot of them have to do with, like for myself, you know, I know that for me, and I don't think this is unusual, I started to experience the feeling, like when I was growing up, we were suspicious, a little bit suspicious of wealthy people. Right. Like there was just this underlying, like,
there must be something not right going on here.
Exactly. There's something suspicious here. Either they were suspicious or they were overly fancy, you know? So they were both of these. Yeah. There's just this sort of general suspicion. And so, you know, I think as you start to become more successful, that, you know, the fear of betrayal, the fear of people judging you, the fear of allowing yourself to be seen in a state of relative success. And, you know, listen, we've all been there when, you know, I know that listening to this, it's like, it sounds like this like privileged thing and that you're the star of your own after school miniseries. But that's how drama works. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like that's how drama and your inner saboteurs work. Everybody's thinking about me. Everybody is so obsessed with me. But those are some of the things, like the fear of betrayal, the fear of judgment. Those things can be can definitely come up. Another fear is that when is the other shoe going to drop?
Yes, that's mine. That's the terrible one that just plays in my head all day long. I'm like, really, where is this even coming from?
Exactly, you know? And it's funny because until you've been there, until you know, like I know exactly what you're talking about. You know what it's like? It's like there's this deep in your gut, it's like there's this radar. And the radar is like ba-boom.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like scanning. When is it? So that you're prepared.
Like waiting for like an email that comes through and says like the whole thing is just blowing up or something. I mean, it could be the tiniest thing. And I'm like, why am I anxious over this? Is nothing.
Right? I know. It's like, I feel you. And, you know, it's just such a joy actually to talk about it. I think it's, you can look at it like misery loves company, but it's not like that, right? It's more like it's such a joy just to hear somebody else have that. And then you can laugh about it and it puts our own sort of inner saboteurs or these inner money stories into just kind of a more empathetic light.
That's why I am so passionate about talking about money on this show, right? It's not just like, here are the five steps that you need to do with your money, but it's these conversations because my hope, I mean, I've done over 750 episodes and I'm still a student of every guest who has been on the show because we get caught in ourselves. We get caught in our inner monologues. And even though we might know, quote unquote, what to do or not to do with our money, it's a very tricky landscape. So I think having these conversations, it's for me, hopefully we all realize that, hey, we're all really alike in this. Okay, friend, I want to know, what are your money goals this year? Are you saving to buy a house or maybe a wedding or a dream vacation to somewhere tropical? If that's you, please, please take me with you. Or maybe you want to just grow your emergency fund because, let's be real, life is expensive. I want to make sure you reach your goals, so you need Monarch. That's why the Wall Street Journal named it the best app for growing your savings.
Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track progress towards your financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. Here's what I love. Monarch is the most customizable budgeting app. You can change the layout of your dashboard. You can go between light and dark mode. You can create custom budgets and notifications. You can set up all of these automatic rules for your transactions and notifications, and so much more. Monarch is obsessed with constantly improving their product. Get this. They release updates every 2 weeks, and they even allow customers to submit suggestions, vote on requested features, and view the product roadmap. This, my friend, is totally original. Plus, they will never sell your data to third party or show you ads. I think that's really important. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it is the top-rated personal finance app. And now, listeners of this show get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. That's monarchmoney.com/ETM for your extended 30-day free trial. When it comes to financial advice, you gotta trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I was paying for vacations all wrong. I was missing out on miles. I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? I don't know, maybe that fancy hotel upgrade that you have always been dreaming about. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. I'm sorry, but I have the best dog ever. Her name is Winnie Stardust. She is a mini golden mountain doodle, full of life, and I would do just about anything to keep her happy, healthy, and safe. Today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. Your pet is part of your family, and you want to do the best for them. But vet bills can really add up. We jokingly keep telling Winnie she needs to get a job to pay for her vet bill. That's why you should check out pet insurance. And with ASPCA Pet Health Insurance, you can focus on the care your pet deserves and cover what matters most. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customized accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping to ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are. Because vet bills can really add up, especially when you are least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/ETM. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/ETM. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/ETM. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independent American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer, is not engaged in the business of insurance.
Yes. Well, and you know what's so interesting? When I think about my grandfather's book that I was telling you about, you know, and on the cover of it were all these totems that different societies had used for money, you know, so there were cowrie shells, whale's teeth, you know, all of that different kind of stuff. And no matter what the currency is, money for as long as time, whatever, whether it was coins, crypto, whatever, it represents this outer change in status. And that outer change in status, if it comes before you've had this inner discernment, you know, or inner shift in status, it opens up this separation. And that's the thing, right? Like, you know, wow, things are going well. I have a lot more money than I used to have. And that's happening externally, but internally, have I made the shift yet to be the woman who is capable of having all of this? And that is the part, like the delta between external reality and internal reality. That's where I think, to me, that's where all of the richness comes, like that development work that we do. I don't know about you, but I've always found like it's been a wonderful thing to work on the business, to develop my ability to build wealth. But to me, more important than the money, like that's important, of course, but has been the woman I've become in the process. I love her. I love what she knows. You know what I mean?
All the good stuff and the not so good stuff. It's all there together.
Exactly. I'll accept Oliver.
Well, you also host a podcast, Power, Presence, and Position, three very strong P words. Tell me a little bit about the show. Like, what are some of your favorite episodes?
Yeah. So probably my very favorite episode was my, speaking of money, was an episode that I did with Barbara Corcoran. Oh my gosh. She was fantastic, hilarious, personable, I just had this strong impression of an entrepreneur and an investor and TV celebrity who just has created a life that she truly loves, That's been one of my favorite episodes. And interviewing, clients and female founders that I've had the chance to work with have been amazing. I mean, the show is really all about practical insight for female founders. And so we're really talking about how, the practical realities of building a seven-figure business and, inspiring stories from women who have done it or on their way to it. That's what the show's all about.
So cool. I love it. Yeah. Well, I want to wrap it up maybe with a little bit of a bow here. We've talked about so many things, but what do you think ultimately we need to remember about what it takes to break that threshold and become a seven-figure entrepreneur?
Ooh, oh my gosh. I love it. So I would say, it's about making the shift from a hunter to a farmer.
Okay. All right. Tell us a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. So a hunter type entrepreneur is somebody who kind of gets out there, makes some sales. It's like you're out there, you kill something, you drag it back to the cave to provide for the family. So you're going out, you're doing projects, you're doing sales. Everything is very short term and relatively opportunistic. The farmer mentality, and the thing is that can work, but it can be quite exhausting. And that's, my very first business was very much like that. A farmer mentality is somebody who decides this is going to be, they look at their business not as a buffalo hunting expedition, but more as an orchard. So I'm going to plant the seeds. I'm going to cultivate the seeds. I'm going to put in a hydration system. I'm going to fertilize the soil. I'm going to carefully tend these trees, and then I'm going to harvest. So it's that switch to more focus. It's that switch to fertilizing, carefully pruning, caring for it, and then reaping much bigger rewards in the long term. I think that's the big shift that I think is so important to make.
I love it. Well, Eleanor, this has been so fantastic. I'm sure you've inspired so many listeners. I'd love for you to tell everyone where they could go to connect with you if they want to work with you, and also where they can go to find your podcast.
Thank you so much, Shanna. It's just a privilege to be on this show. 700 and whatever episodes. Like, it's incredible. I have like 480. You're literally one of the few people who I've ever met who has double. I am inspired. Like, I bow down. That is commitment. So very impressive. So you can go to eleanorbeaton.com or connect with me on LinkedIn or Instagram at Eleanor Beaton. Those are all really great places to go to connect. And the podcast is called Power, Presence, Position. You can find that on all the big podcast platforms. Would love to hear from you and what you got out of our conversation today.
Wow, what an amazing episode. One of my biggest takeaways was when Eleanor shared the idea that money represents this outer change. But if the outer change comes before the inner change, we have a serious problem. Again, back to the reason why money success is 90% a mental game. I don't know about you, but as a woman, I am ready to go out and claim those seven figures. Are you with me? Listen, if you enjoyed this episode, share it with a friend or family member, someone who you know also wants to kick butt in business. You can head to the show notes for all the links to our episode guests and the sponsors who make this podcast possible. I will see you right back here in a few days for a brand new episode.
Hey, you. Yes, you. Before you go, we want to say thanks for listening to this episode of Millennial Money. For all the links, tags, and ads you've heard on today's episode, check out the show notes or go to mmoneypodcast.com, where you'll find more episodes to share with your friends. While you're at it, leave us a review and make sure to subscribe wherever you listen so you don't miss out on all the money tips and tricks that will take you from a millennial regular to a millennial money expert. See you back here in a few days with a fresh new episode.
Rakuten helps you be a smarter shopper and save money on just about everything. People all have things they need to buy, whether it's home essentials or a self-care treat just for you. With Rakuten, you get cash back on clothes, groceries, travel, and much, much more. Even better, you can stack cash back on top of other deals like store sales and credit card points. In case you're wondering, the stores on Rakuten are the ones you know and love, and lots of cool ones waiting to be discovered, including Target, Lowe's, and Nike. When it comes to savvy shopping and saving money, Rakuten is a no-brainer. It's free and easy to join. Just go to Rakuten.com now or download the Rakuten app today. That's Rakuten.